Okay, the recorder's on, so you call the meeting to order at 7 o'clock.
Great, thank you. Thanks for coming. First order of business is to approve the minutes of the August 17th meeting. Everybody have a chance to read them. Any questions?
I move we accept them as read.
We're talking about the minutes to last month's meeting. There's a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
Legislator Green, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried, 6-0. Okay, resolution. Actually, is there anything here we can... Okay, B, you're here for the first one, right?
Yep.
Okay. Resolution 298, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 13 of 2015, a local law regarding campaign finance reform to be held on Tuesday, October 14th. Okay. Any discussion?
Anybody want to
move
it?
I'll move it for discussion.
Okay. Do we have a second? Legislator Donaldson?
You also have gotten an email, which I sent out about an hour ago.
5:40.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I did not have my phone, so I didn't see the email.
Well, I was provided by a legislator with the revised local law about 2:30, quarter to 3, and started to review it. I had already drafted an opinion based upon your previous initial local law, but I was advised that it was being revised, so I waited, obviously, to finalize my opinion. It should be done by tomorrow, but I am concerned about the local law and the legality of it and some of the changes that were made, and I would urge you not to rush this, but read my opinion tomorrow. I'm not telling you that it can't be adopted, but I am telling you that there are problems with it that need to be addressed. So.
Could you elaborate on some of the problems you've seen already?
Well, it's vague in one respect, in that it seems to exempt a certain class of people who are in the union, but doesn't address the other class. So in my opinion, in some case law that I found, we're creating a special class, which is a constitutional issue. You cannot create a special class of people without justification. That's one of the issues. That's you know, black letter constitutional law. The other is, I believe, state election law preempts it. The only challenge that I've seen to a public finance campaign law is in the city of New York. In the city of New York's campaign finance law, was reviewed by the court, and they found that it was valid because it provided public financing in addition to the restrictions on campaign contributions. This local law doesn't provide that, and I have concerns about that. There are probably others. Orange County has one, but it's never been challenged, so Ulster County will become the test case, or could become the test case, and clearly, if you're going to be able to adopt something and it gets challenged, it's my responsibility to ward off that challenge and defend the county, and we need to be in a position, a better position, if we're going to adopt this local law. But I will go into it in detail in my opinion tomorrow.
Okay. Right, B, can you, when you said it was vague and there was and it exempts some people, be more specific?
There's a section called exemptions, and I don't remember the number of what it was, but it was B.
It's section 8.
B.
The contribution limitations specified in this local law do not apply to Ulster County employees subject to collective bargaining agreements.
So by process of analysis, it would appear that it would apply to anyone who is not covered by a CSEA contract. The exemption.
Or collective bargaining, right. Not just CSEA.
Right. Well, it could be NYSLUD, it could be CWA, it could be PBA. Any collective.
Policeman.
Yeah, the PBA.
Yeah. Can I ask question B? I know this is more of a statement, but, you know, the county executive, this was a major part of his speech a year and a half ago. Why hasn't he come?
Because I told him that I didn't believe that it was.
But there are.
He could do that.
But we could do some. You can do legal campaign finance reform to offer some suggestions. It just almost feels like it was just a great speech to stand up in front of the press and us, but then he didn't back it up with any ideas, didn't work with the legislature, no emails on how to make this law better, any proposals he would like to have in it. So it's I mean, I can't imagine it from being a major platform in a state of the union.
Well, he's not an attorney, and usually he usually listens to me when I tell him that I have a problem with it legally.
But you didn't look at it before he said the speech?
Well, there was nothing to look at before he said the speech.
So he just got up and talked about all the stuff that was illegal.
I don't think he okays his speeches to obey, that's for sure.
There's a potential.
Oh, that's fine. It just seems to me if he was really.
Well, this is not about the county executive. It's about.
Well, it is because this is his idea.
This is about the county at this point.
But this is his idea. This is something that's important to him. And we're trying to move his goals forward and to help work to bring it to fruition. And there's been a speech about it, but there's been no rolling up the sleeves and saying, let's do this so we can really get a good piece of legislation that's good for the residents. There's just been nothing.
You know, Rich, you got a good point, and this might be a question that Dean might not be able to answer, but I'm sure you talked to the executive. You said, you know, the executive hasn't rolled up his sleeves. Will he be willing to roll up his sleeves and sit down with either a committee or a group of legislators to come up with an answer that might be beneficial and meet your legal requirements or the constitutional requirements?
I can't speak for him, but I do believe that he'd be willing to sit down. He's never said no to anyone about sitting down and discussing something or consulting it. Not to my knowledge, he hasn't, okay?
You know, I waited a year and a half for some folks to work with me on doing this thing. I talked to Kenny on and off. We have other counsel here that have never told me that this is unconstitutional. I can't speak to them and mention their names. We know who our counsels are, but I have not gotten anything from anybody that throws out the statement, well, it's unconstitutional. The one thing that's an important part of this is that it's not necessarily against the law or these guidelines for somebody to offer you money. It's against the law for you to take it. And there's a big difference. You know, somebody could have, for the sake of a silly analogy, AB blood, and I could have B blood. If I give you my B blood, you die. But I'll offer it to you if you really need it. Now, everybody knows that money is the intoxicant, and it's the gateway intoxicant to all the problems that's going on in politics. You can't convince me that these folks that are constantly getting in trouble in other areas started out wanting to be criminal. But things happen, and we have to start somewhere. And not only are we talking about trying to make it clean, but also to avoid the appearance of a conflict. I'll give you a for instance. I was talking on Gary Bischoff's show one day, three months ago. I just mentioned we were going to do this thing, and some guy in the background says, "Oh yeah. Well, I see that the executive is endorsing somebody who gave him money for the marijuana place." I said, "I don't think that's got anything to do with this." But why did they bring that up? It wasn't prompted by me. Now, this has been floating around for a couple of months. And suddenly now, I guess we have some constitutional problems. I don't really agree with that at all. I don't agree with it. I run it by the folks that I talk to, and they don't see any constitutional issues. Of course, if it's a test case and it goes to the Supreme Court, maybe there will be a problem. But I think somebody has to take the bull by the horns and start to address this issue. And I'll go one step further, and then I'll leave you alone for now. Judges have all sorts of restrictions on who they can take money from and what they can know and what they can't know and who they can support and who they can solicit or can't solicit. So when things are unconstitutional, it's very hazy in there as to, you know, can a judge take money from somebody that he's got before him in the court? Probably not. It's a conflict of interest. Or is it unconstitutional to prevent him from taking it?
I'm pretty sure that the way that the if I could just jump in, Chairman.
Sure.
Pretty sure the way judges work, to avoid that impropriety, judges are not supposed to be allowed to know who's donating to them.
Right. Right.
You know, when a judge is having a fundraiser and they acknowledge the sponsors, the judge has to leave the room. Even judge
can't. It's a big over his head.
But again, it's not just for the judge. It's also for prospective judges, folks who have not taken the bench yet.
Yes.
Legislator Green.
A couple of questions and a bizarre typo on page 6. Section D. I'm not even going to read it.
Which one? Which section? C?
Section 9D.
Yes, we need a K, it looks like.
Isn't it asked or assessed?
Oh.
I think it's assessed.
Assessed.
D?
Being assessed.
Yeah.
Toward the bottom.
D is in David. Civil penalties being assessed to the county.
Oh.
Okay. Just a typo, but the I would very much like to have time to hear what what B, you know, to see her memo on this. But my other question is, and I think it's unintentional, and it may be covered by the campaign authorized or a campaign authorized by such individual. It appears to only apply to elected officials that are already elected, not the people that are opposing or running against the elected an incumbent. So that's repeated throughout here, but in particular in section 4B. So those are my two comments, but I want to say that I absolutely believe that campaign finance reform is critical to our democracy, and if we can work out something that is acceptable to everyone, I think that's a step in the right direction.
It all starts at home.
Would we be able to add that anyone that's actually not only county elected officials, but those that are running for office?
I just can't see why we can't have a public hearing and let everybody tell us it's no good. That's kind of my point. Maybe somebody will come up with a better idea or change some things.
I mean, I've been consistent the whole time that I think that that we should wait until after Election Day to have a public hearing on it. I said that last month, and I was, you know, not on the winning side of that. I think that something like this is better hashed out when you're not having to deal with who's running for office and who's not, and who's, you know, again, one of my reasons for wanting a 4-year term for the legislature, which also didn't meet with satisfaction from everybody, is to take the politics out of governance to the best of your ability. You're never going to take the politics out of politics, but to the best of your ability to do so, I'd like to see that done. I'd have no problem with passing a resolution to set a public hearing now and setting it after November.
So you want to just change it to November?
No, November 11th would be the date that I would put, and then we'd pass it now and then have the public hearing after, you know, the elections have been settled, and we can have an honest, open public discussion on it.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree with you that
I understand.
It has to be after the election, but I'm willing to. It's not a deal breaker to me.
But can we add? In other words, all elected officials. I mean, on the other side, I mean, if I'm running mm-hmm. against Manna Joe, and I can take the money, but Manna can.
Without stepping on the chairman's toes or speaking for him, I think that might have been his intention, was to have the incumbents be subject to it and not the challengers. Is that...
That's sort of correct, yeah. Yes. But listen...
Well, can I make a comment?
First of all, I would readily say let's do it right after Election Day, if that's when we could pass it and set the hearing. I have no problem. Dave, I did write it that way on purpose because... incumbency usually has a great advantage.
Yes. Yeah.
And a challenger isn't really going to have access or resources to know county vendors and county employees and stuff, but where an incumbent does. The incumbents can still go outside the county and raise money. It doesn't prohibit them from raising money from people that don't do business with the county or work for the county.
But conversely, just to that point, you know, on the other side of that, you know, doesn't then the challenger have an unfair advantage, because a challenger who's trying to get elected to the county executive has just as much of a chance of being, I don't want to say bought off, because that's not the right word, but of being influenced by donations given by a contractor that does business for the county in hopes that they'll get elected and then give out contracts. I mean, that's...
Do you think a challenger, somebody that does business with a contractor, is going to give money to a challenger of an incumbent person?
If they're the only ones that can accept it, possibly.
But
you're funneling the money to the one place it can go.
Instead of even looking at it that from that angle, you know, often you end up having people that are running for office. Well, maybe the next time Paul decides he's not going to run for sheriff, so you have a challenger, and there are two challengers basically for the position. There's non-incumbents now. Then it's like a free for all; they can take whatever they want.
Right.
But Paul is not allowed to take anything.
He's allowed to take money, he just can't take it from people that do business with the county.
Over a certain dollar amount.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how that unlevels the playing field in any way, shape, or form.
What I'm thinking that neither one of them is any better. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, let's say Dave is the county executive and I'm running against Dave. You know, a lot of times donors will hedge their bets and give to both. Both sides of an issue. So, especially if they have contracts with the county. So Dave can only accept $500 from the contractor, and I can accept $5,000 from the contractor. How is that equitable? I don't know.
Well, once he gives you the $5,000, he's not getting a job once he got in there.
Okay. So any other discussion? Do you
want to say anything? No. I think just, you know, I put a lot of time and research into my memo. You know, I like to... Mm-hmm. Make sure it's I've crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, so I'm going to try and get it to you tomorrow, barring no emergencies.
I make a motion that we amend the resolution to read public hearing will be held on Wednesday, November 11th.
No.
No?
It's Veterans Day.
Oh, good call.
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
It's Veterans Day. I should know that, because that's the day I'm leaving.
You what?
Veterans Day.
Armistice Day.
Because you moved your caucuses to the 12th.
Okay. All right, so the 12th then.
Legislative Green.
Well, we have a motion. We have to see if we have a second, but I want to speak to
it. I'll second it.
I would prefer to table and have a chance to work on it and try to get a document that we can get support for if it is legal to do something like this. And since we're putting the public hearing off to November, I'd rather that we act on it prior to, you know, that we meet before the November public hearing. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we could set the public hearing.
You set the public hearing and we can still amend this item.
In committee.
In committee before the, in other words, we have a tentative date.
The local law has to be set by the public hearing. The local law has to be in its final...
7 days before.
Seven days before,
it has to be advertised.
So it's got to be,
days before it's advertised, but so it has to be laid on the table. Correct. Days.
So we could change this next October. In October, next month. We could change it next month.
Okay.
This way, at least...
This way, we're having a public hearing.
You know, this has been around a while. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, sir.
I just want to thank you once again, because this is your baby. And a lot of us here, and myself, and I don't know who else has helped you on this. I know I didn't offer you any guidance at all on this. I apologize. I think it's a good idea.
November 12th is a public hearing on the budget.
I'm listening.
I think it's a good idea that what you're doing and stuff, but at the end of the day, I think you and most of us here want to see a law that's not only going to get passed, but not get vetoed. And I would like to see that the executive's office and staff work with you, and if possible, and maybe hash out something by, you know, the next meeting so we could approve that and set the public hearing.
I've been doing this long enough now over my years to hear, you know, people postpone and they postpone and they postpone.
I agree, John.
When the executive said in his speech a year and a half ago he wanted campaign finance, 2 weeks later I said, it's a great idea, let's work on it. Nothing.
I agree with what you're saying, but right now we're at the end where the public hearing's inevitable. So, I mean,
not inevitable. Not if it's voted down.
Well, if you said it, here's if I could. Rich, is it all right if I?
Let's sit around.
If we set the public hearing for November 17th, which is the new date that I've come out. It's the apparently we're in Shangum at the budget hearing. I won't be here then. I'm really disappointed. I'm missing the budget hearing at my own town hall. But I'm going to be on vacation.
Well, I'll go there and talk bad about you.
I appreciate it. So, hey, it'd be good of you to come to Shangum.
Where is that?
Is that again?
Yeah.
No, it's
November 17th is our meeting date.
It's Orange County.
For November.
We'd have to do it at session.
Yeah, so we would do it at session on November 17th. We'd have to change the time to 7 p.m., I believe. If we set the date, and that gives essentially a terminus for people to give changes to the local law, and that sets in stone. We'll call it a negotiating timetable if there is to be any negotiation or discussion on it, and then it would allow people to suggest changes, but isn't going to allow it to be postponed for eternity.
And I like words, but that would be. You know, we've sent this out to all the good governance groups, and a number of them have sent back, okay, we're working on it, we're going to read it over, and if anybody from you or the executive, anybody has, let's say, had some things to it, that's great.
I would be appreciative of seeing anything that you have. It might be helpful for my deliberations if you have It might be helpful for my deliberations if you have any opinions or responses. That would be helpful.
I'd like to see. The idea of creating the date makes, you know, perfect sense, and I agree with you. It creates a timetable. And I also, like I said to Roberts, I want to thank John for doing this, because nobody else initiative that pushed this item that needed to be pushed. And I'm glad that he spent this much time on it, because he did spend a lot of time, and he's been, all along, he's been willing to change, adjust, and people bring up something, and that's the whole idea of creating good law. And so if you agree with it, if John doesn't have a problem with doing on the night on the 17th, I'll go along with that.
John, if you can, too, could you make sure that our attorneys are here on the 17th?
Yeah.
Our next meeting,
I'm sorry.
And I've worked with them.
I know you have.
Can I just say, I should have said this earlier, it's... because of the holiday today, Cappy asked me if he could celebrate,
honor. It's the end of the High Holy Day.
Yeah, so I told him.
It ended at sunset today.
Right, so I told him that he, to observe the day, and he didn't have to be here. So
we're amending it to November 17th at 7 p.m.?
Yes.
I didn't hear who the second was.
I think I did.
That's right.
Okay, all in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
I'm going to vote no.
To change the date and the time? We're not voting on a resolution yet.
Oh, okay.
I
misunderstood that it was... Well, we might as well also change, if you're going to change... If you're making an amendment, can you also amend the typo?
The typo doesn't have to be...
And it can still be amended before the 17th again, because it's just got to be 10 days.
Yeah, we've got to meet again.
We're just voting on the date change.
That's what this is right now.
Got it.
Right.
So that carried 6-0. Now we're going to vote on the resolution to set a public hearing on the 17th. Now we're going to actually vote to set the public hearing.
Okay. You should be aware, too, that it's not... It's actually longer than 10 days based upon the fact that we publish in the weekly newspapers.
Right.
Under county law, we have to publish in... It's kind of antiquated. You guys could pass a local law to change it, but we have to publish...
Well, give us one.
That's actually under the charter. That's a responsibility of legislative council. But you have to have lead time with the weeklies. You have to have at least a week lead time.
Yeah, we'll work with Vicky. Vicky knows when she has to publish these things. We'll work with Vicky on a timetable.
She works with me when you adopt them because I've got a deadline to meet with the weeklies.
October 14th is when hopefully it would get passed, and then it gives us 34 days.
Yeah. Public Works is on the 8th in... not Public Works. Laws and Rules is when is Laws and Rules?
It's the Monday before the. It'd be October 13th. It'd be the night before the meeting.
Okay, got it.
It's the day before.
Is that Columbus Day?
The 12th is
the 12th.
Wait a second.
I think it might be Columbus Day.
Wait a second. No, we would do. Oh, because everything's pushed back a day that week.
Okay.
So right. Normally it would be, the meeting would be Monday, the legislative meeting would be Tuesday. So that week it's going to be Wednesday and then Tuesday. So okay. We pushed them both back a day. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So right. Our meeting is going to be October 13th.
Right, right. Our meeting will be Tuesday instead of Monday.
Then.
Okay, on the resolution.
As amended,
all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Sure.
Carried 5-1. 5-1. Legislative Green voted no. Okay, now we're going to go to resolution 354, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 16, a local law to prohibit soliciting, peddling, or vending on any county-owned property to allow for use of county-owned and leased building space by veterans and disabled members of Ulster County.
I'll move it, and I'd like to thank the chairman for putting it in. I think it's a great law.
Okay. Anybody, we have a motion?
Moved.
Moved second, I mean.
We have a second.
Okay.
I'd like to thank Legislator Lopez for helping me out, helping everyone out with this, moving it forward.
Okay. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 6-0. Okay. Resolution number 357, setting a public hearing on amended proposed local law number 12, a local law of Ulster County for the regulation of pet sellers. Oh, no.
356,
my bad.
Yes.
Adopting proposed local law number 11, a local law establishing the county animal abuse registry.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, on the resolution to adopt the proposed local law, many of the, I think all of the concerns that we received were about proposed local law number 12,
right.
The pet sellers, and I had been struggling because we've made some changes in response to the comments in the public hearing on local law number 12. We've made some changes that we think is going to improve the local law. On the concerns that the breeders brought forward and some on the concerns that humane organizations had brought forward and rescues had brought forward. We were going to move both of these back to the Law Enforcement Committee because it seemed like a package. But Legislator Archer and I spoke about it. I didn't have the opportunity to speak to Legislator Wishnick, but Legislator Archer and I spoke about it earlier, and we thought, to show some progress, why wouldn't we adopt the Animal Abuse Registry now since there weren't any real objections to it, and then send the pet sellers law back with the changes and the concerns from the public hearing. The way our rules work is, in the Laws and Rules Committee, after a public hearing on a local law, looks at the comments from the public hearing and then decides whether or not to make changes, and if the changes are deemed substantive, sends them back to the originating committee. Which would be the Law Enforcement Committee on this. So my urging of the committee tonight would be to adopt Resolution 356 and send it to the floor and then move the other one back to the Law Enforcement Committee.
Okay. Does anybody like to speak on this?
This is the Animal Abuse Registry.
This is the registry one.
It's a fine thing to do, and it calls out if you're basically an axe murderer for animals, you deserve some public recognition of that. Fine.
Okay.
I'd just like to comment, if I might. Rich, as you well know, about 3 months ago, I was carrying my 9 or 10 month old granddaughter, and right behind me was my 2.5 year old granddaughter walking out of Robert's house when a dog came across and bit the hell out of me in my leg. So I was black and blue from the knee to my ankle. I'm going to tell you that if I didn't have those infants in my hand, the dog would be dead. But I had enough problems trying to protect them. Now, my problem is, if that dog did that to me and I didn't have the kids and I crushed that animal's skull, because I would have, then I'm going to have some guy from the SPCA come out and interrogate me, who's not a government official. Not a government official.
They are.
No, and then what do I do? Do I give him my constitutional right to have counsel with me when I'm being questioned? Now, I can live with all this. But inside the computers of some place, there's an accusation that maybe I am an axe murderer. And I have read horror stories about people being misidentified with, let's say, the child abuse laws or things like that.
Sex offender registry. Yeah.
And they're in it for years. And what recourse would I have? Now, if I was found guilty of killing this animal, which if I didn't have the kids with me, believe me, the dog wouldn't be around today. But how do I get my name out of those records? How do I get my name out of the files of the SPCA or wherever it goes? That's my question.
My answer to that is very simple. The animal abuse crimes that you would have to register as an animal, register after being convicted of, which is defined in the law as an adjudication of guilty by any court of competent jurisdiction, whether it be under a verdict of guilty or a plea of guilty. So you would have had to go either before a jury of your peers or plead guilty to one of the animal abuse crimes, of which defending yourself against an attacking animal is not
okay.
One.
But my problem is this person from the SPCA or wherever they're
They
from,
don't have the ability to put you on the registry. You have to register for the
How
registry
do you
the same
they
way.
They arrest me, don't they? Can they arrest me or charge me?
They can arrest you or charge you, but you don't go on the registry until you're guilty.
But I'm already now inside some computer bank as an abuser. Oh, yes, I am.
No, you're not. Not under this law.
But you would be, let's face it.
Yes, I am. If somebody hacked into the SPCA or someplace,
well,
they would find that John Parody was arrested for animal abuse.
If the SPCA came to your house, and it would have to be the humane law the humane law enforcement officer at the SPCA, who is a credentialed peace officer under New York State law, would have to come to your house and do an investigation. Upon investigation, he'd have to find reasonable cause to arrest you. You know, maybe you beat the dog to death with a baseball bat, or maybe you shot the dog with an arrow in somebody's backyard. Two cases. Well, no, these are two cases so far that were just tried in our county court, where animals have been, you know, beaten to death or shot to death, or, you know, there was one case in Rochester where there was a dachshund that was bludgeoned to death. Every bone in the dog's body was broken. So, you know, they would have to find reasonable cause to arrest you for the crime, at which point there would be a record of your arrest for said crime that I guess would be in a computer somewhere, like you say. But you wouldn't go on this registry until you've been convicted and registered for the registry.
It would still have been on in that computer somewhere.
And that has nothing to do with this local law.
Well, it does.
It doesn't.
It does. I mean, read you your constitutional rights?
If they're going to arrest you, yes.
What about when he comes to talk to you? Is he trained like a police officer?
Yes.
Say anything you say will be held against you?
Yes.
I understand where this has come from. Listen, I've had animals all my life. But I saw a situation where I could be subjected to this and or could have been.
Yep.
Except I was hobbled by carrying people. And that's not a good thing.
Let me give you another scenario.
And let me just say this. Policemen are busy guys.
Yes.
Busy men and women.
They are.
Things fall in their lap. Some other folks are looking for pinches. You know what a pinch is?
I believe so.
Yeah. Some folks are looking for it, you know?
Well, let me give you another scenario, and let me ask you if you'd find it different. You know, you had a dog coming at you, it was biting at you, you would have... It bit you. But I'm saying, let's just say that you weren't holding the kids, a dog came at you, bit you, and you beat it down, or you killed it, or you shot it, or you stabbed it, or you X, Y, or Z to stop the attack on you. What would be different about that, where you would be charged and convicted of something, than if somebody was coming at you with a baseball bat and you had some means to defend yourself against that person? You wouldn't be charged with a crime there. You would be questioned, and you might have been fingerprinted. You might have been brought into the station for questioning. What's different about the two scenarios that makes this?
Well, first
that
of all, makes, I don't like somebody who's not a government worker,
but
coming by, because I don't believe that they have the training.
A humane law enforcement officer is.
It's just
that's your opinion, Legislator Ron.
No, it's not.
No, they're legal. He's right.
They are legal, but you don't know the level of training they've had.
Well,
they certainly haven't had training
like
state police
said,
and sheriff.
And it's not necessarily a fair
people,
accusation. I understand that. But you know, we all wonder do policemen have quotas? You know,
how long have some
you
been away?
Give out three tickets a week, or you're not doing your job. Well,
2 years
ago. Seldom do I find somebody, some of these folks that's just slapped an animal around.
Well,
all right, let's.
All right, go ahead.
Can I say one more thing?
One more thing.
You know, there's also a much lower, there's also a much greater burden of proof when you're dealing with an animal abuse case, because to prove felony animal abuse. In the state of New York, you need to prove, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury that you that the person who is convicted intended to cause the death of the animal. If you only intended to bludgeon the animal to within an inch of its life, it's a misdemeanor.
You know what? What if my dog is ill? He's bloated. He's got a twisted stomach. And he's dying, and I go out in the backyard and
shoot him.
Shoot him.
Sign
okay, am I going to end up on his registry?
Yeah, you
do I
can't do that in $600? New York State. You have
to. You'd
have to take him.
And bring him to
you'd have to take him to a veterinarian and have it humanely euthanized.
So farmers and people that have done that for 100 years with their animals, they're now subject to be on an abuse registry.
People used to dump PCBs in the huts, and you can't do that anymore.
What if
either?
Somebody doesn't have the resources to spend $300 or $400 to bring an animal to have a shot, like I've done? I mean, I just had my golden put down. And it was extremely safe and humane.
What happens if you don't have the money to bring your child to the doctor to get a
injection? But this isn't a law pertaining to children, all right? So let's stick to what it is. It's a law pertaining to pets, and I appreciate it. But there are times or issues.
What happens if you don't? Oh.
Listen. Let me speak.
Go ahead.
On. I would hate to see somebody that's taken care of a dog or their animals or their pets their whole life. The animal is at the end of their life. They're sick. They're ill. They spent money, maybe perhaps, treating this animal, and a neighbor they can humanely, with whether it be with a gun, to humanely put them down. They can end up on this list if a neighbor finds out about it. Is that true?
Well, they'd have to be convicted first.
Well, yeah, but it is against the law, I believe, to shoot your dog in the head at home.
Yeah, but you don't think that's not done?
By
loving pet owners. So the alternative is when your dog has twisted stomach, and it's in shock and dying a painful long death in shock, it's safe to allow that dog to die that way, but you can't humanely take it outside and put it out of its misery and kill it. So
what happens if you miss?
So that's it's you know. A deer gets hit, the police officers or the people that a neighbor doesn't let the deer stand there and let it die. They shoot it with a bullet to put it out of its misery,
New York
to
State,
humanely kill it.
New York State law sees a deer different than a dog.
It's not a domestic pet.
So my question is, a domestic pet that
they're
is
called companion
that is,
animals
that
under
is
the law.
Suffering, that is suffering from maybe getting hit by a car, cannot be put out of its misery. It's got to sit there and suffer, or somebody takes the risk of ending being, if they don't have the money or the resources to go to the vet to have it put down for, I think I paid $350. Or
probably.
Whatever.
That sounds right.
If they don't
right.
have the resources to do that, they have to let their animal suffer for the last.
And could you get turned in for letting an animal suffer?
Yeah, can you get turned in for letting an animal suffer?
So
I understand.
I'm playing the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And here's the best part of this whole local law. Somebody can be on this registry and go to Dutchess County and buy a dog. Then go to Orange County and buy a dog.
Well, yeah, but you can't.
So this is really more, to me, while I support animals and I have a black lab, I've put two Goldens down of old age in the last 4 years. Not many people have more pets than I've had in my life. And I will tell you, it's, to me, this is...
Having a pet is expensive.
And I had and one of my Goldens died of twisted stomach. And he died with me sitting there. And I didn't have the courage to shoot him or the guts to do it. But he suffered from 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. It was the second time it happened in 3 years. I was not going to bring him back to the vet. He was 11 years old. He laid on my floor and panted and suffered for hours till 5 or 6 in the morning when he died. You don't think I should have been allowed to go outside and have a neighbor shoot him? You think the which one is more inhumane?
I'm not saying that I don't think
well,
you should be able to do
this
that.
This law says that shooting him is more inhumane and putting him out of his misery.
No. This law doesn't say that. New York State law says that.
PETA law says that. Okay.
It's the Ag and Markets law. Right.
Well,
close.
But this law also says it.
Also, if you shoot the dog within 500 feet of a residence, you've committed a crime as well.
And speaking of this,
there's no house.
I think we've beaten this horse to death.
Your house is within 1,000 feet of your house.
Okay, so could I put him in a parking lot and by accident
well,
run over him with my car?
Horse.
Would that be a more humane
this
way?
Horse
I'm
trying
to advocate
with
the unintended consequences to what neighbors can accuse neighbors of doing that don't like people.
Well,
somebody's got a dog that was barking loud or pooping all over the yard,
and the
dog is ill or something happens. There's people out there that listen. I was on grand jury a couple of years ago, and there was a lady that in New Paltz that was having consensual sex. And her boyfriend walked in a room, and she cried rape. The grand jury convicted this guy of rape. The girl felt guilty, and 2 weeks later came back and told the grand jury she lied.
So the grand jury didn't convict him, the grand jury indicted him.
We had to indict him. We actually had to unindict him. But what I'm getting at is...
This doesn't say you have to go on when you're indicted of something.
But you're on the list, though.
You're on a list.
Not if you're indicted of something. You have to be... I'm going to make this very clear once for everybody. You have to be convicted. An adjudication of guilty, whether by a jury or by a plea of guilty.
Let's
finish this up then.
If the situation that he did, because I know when the dog was dying, is suffering and suffering and suffering. So he puts it out of his misery. Now he has to be found guilty because it's against the law to shoot it.
Well, the prosecutor has to decide whether or not he's going to prosecute it initially.
Correct.
Well,
by law, he's got to find him guilty.
He has the discretion.
He runs over him in a car, he's got to find him guilty because he let him suffer. Or if he said, yes, I let him suffer because I didn't have the $400.
That's why I'd rather.
He's got to be guilty.
But the $400 really, that argument really bothers me. Because.
Well, I never even heard of him before.
The argument of I don't have enough money to have my animal humanely put down really bothers me. Because you know what? If you don't have the money, if you don't have the money to feed your dog, you're guilty of failing to provide proper sustenance to an animal. And, you know, there's a reason why there's rescue shelters and surrender of animals.
I don't have enough money to buy a Cadillac, but I can keep my own SUV running for a long time, you know. I feed it every day.
Come on.
All right.
We've had enough. Either we support this or not.
All this is, you get put on a registry. You can still buy a dog at a county 5 minutes away. But if it makes everybody feel good.
I think there should be a statewide registry. Well, this legislature has supported statewide registries in the past, but until then, let's do something for Ulster County.
That's fine.
Is my argument.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried 5-0. Okay. Now we're on Resolution 356, adopting proposed local law 11. No.
12.
12 now.
357.
357. Local law in the County of Ulster for the regulation of pet sellers. So.
Motion to table.
Well, I think we have a motion to send it to the laws and, I mean, the... okay. The...
Yeah, this is local law number 12.
Right.
You know,
the motion send it back.
I would, I guess the motion would be that the Laws and Rules Committee concurs with our council, but which are both of our councils, which have weighed in. You know, Council Weiner and Council Garrigan, the minority council, have both determined that the changes that were talked about after the public hearing are substantive changes and should be taken up by the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, which is the Law Enforcement Committee.
Do you have a list of the more or less the complaints that need to be addressed, correct?
I believe that they agree with some of the changes and don't agree that some of the changes have gone far enough.
Yeah, I did email you back. I don't know if you got it.
I think I got an email from you from the county system. I got an email from somebody about...
That was somebody else.
What was the thing that they felt didn't go far enough?
Legislative Donaldson's got three.
What happened that was not... that they said did not go far enough for the...
Well, one of the specific changes that I received a comment about was the ability to withhold water from an animal. That the law requires that water be... constantly available to the animals except under a veterinarian's orders.
Can I ask them why they wanted that?
I mean, you can, but this wouldn't be the proper committee to make policy style changes. But you can ask, yeah.
In the end, I'd still like to know.
Fair enough.
I mean, because if I have to vote on this, I got to know what I'm voting on.
Yeah, so... So I appreciate that this is taken very seriously, because this is a difficult problem. But that specific issue, for example, give your dog a bucket of water, you walk away, they play in your water bucket, it's no longer potable, it's spilled all over the place, the inspector comes in, and now you're an animal abuser because you haven't given your dog proper water because it doesn't have water constantly. So house training the puppies, right? You don't give a kid or a dog or anybody else water 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you don't want it to pee all over the place. So you train the dogs by, at times, withholding water. It makes sense. No water after 8, or they're going to be going to the bathroom at 2 in the morning. If you want to house train your dog, you don't give it constant water. There's basic training and care that this, there's wording in there that says you have to feed your dog not more than once every 12 hours. I guess that means exactly every 12 hours, because if it's 11 hours and 59 minutes and it's 12:01, you can't do it every 12 hours. I don't tell you how often to feed your kids. I want to know that my animals are fed the right amount of food daily. That's it. Don't tell me what to feed them, when to feed them, how to feed them. That's my job. As long as they get enough food of the right quality and are in good condition, that's what matters. Different dogs need different things. And the list goes on and on and on. I got pages of them.
Can we?
One of the things I wanted to... it says if you sell more than 9 dogs in a year. Well, if you have a breed like a beagle or a miniature poodle, you could have one litter a year and have 4 puppies. I breed Goldens. And I've had litters of 10 and 11. So I do one, and I'm really responsible. I'm so responsible that I wouldn't have a problem of people that I sell a puppy to not being able to afford to put their dog down because, number one, I question everybody about their finances, and number two, if they couldn't afford it, I'd pay for it.
Right.
That's the difference between responsible breeders and puppy mills. I will take back every single puppy that I produce. It's one woman I know wanted to get a puppy from me and breed, and I said, when they're 14 years old and they're peeing on the floor and drooling, are you going to take every single one of them back? Because I will. My husband would be really unhappy, but I would do it.
Okay, well,
you know, there's other things in there too. There's a bunch of formulas in there, right? One of them that particularly irks me is if you have a nursing bitch.
A what?
A nursing female.
Okay.
I used the B word, sorry.
That's so all good.
You know, I'll give you a little example. We have some lawyers, they're fairly big, they're 50 pounds. Their whelping box is a 4x4 for when the puppies are just born, 4 foot by 4 foot. This thing says, well, if your area is less than 5%, let's see, 4x4 is 16 square feet, 5% is squigs. If your area that you try and put your 50-pound dog in is bigger than this, not bigger than this, sorry, it's okay if you get the vet to say it's okay. If you're going to put formulas in, don't put stupid formulas in. Because nothing's going to fit in something this big.
Well, did they agree to take that out, language?
It's still in, right? And so there's formulas in here that don't make sense. It still has the whole thing about you could outsource everything to some non-government
agency. Well, that's my issue. I'm going to talk about that. That's the worst.
Me too, because one of the things it says is hair. You've had a golden. There's no time that there's not hair in my kennel. I can clean it, and I turn around, and there's hair. So if someone wanted to was on the warpath to get rid of a breeder, they could just walk in and say, we got hair, we're getting right.
Well, that's exactly.
But it says the same group does the permitting, they do the inspecting, mm-hmm. they do the investigating, and they do the enforcing. The same group.
Yeah. Which I agree. I read all that.
I'm not getting
I was going to bring that up
money,
later.
So I better go do some more enforcement so I can increase my coffers to pay for this program.
Right.
There's
and the
room
commissioner
in here for abuse,
chooses the person.
Appropriate.
The commissioner chooses who enforces it without even us having any input or say in it. We have no say in who the commissioner chooses.
There's no oversight
process.
There's
no. That's right.
Well,
there's no
there
way.
Is. There's an. It has to be an accredited.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if there's seven accredited ones. They can pick whoever they want. We have
there
no
aren't seven accredited ones.
Well, then they say who it is.
I can give you example after example of, and they're not hard to find, takes 5 minutes. Investigator went in, said the place was atrocious, loaded with feces. The policemen were there, said they didn't see anything wrong. The dogs were confiscated. No charges were ever filed because the situation was muddled at best, and now the lawsuit starts. Because I want their dogs back, and they said, you didn't find anything. You came in, you made some accusations, you didn't find anything, you can't prosecute me, and I'm going to sue the heck out of you. Why would we want to put the county in that position? Why don't we have a process of checks and balances so that when you go to enforce, you can prove and document what you're doing so that if they're doing the wrong thing, and it's not some minor technicality like they spilled their water, that you truly get them for the right reasons. If they don't belong to be raising dogs, they don't belong.
Do you see a problem with it right now in the county with breeders who are not doing a good job?
No. Well, that's actually one of the questions that we have
happened.
Continually wondering is, what was the incentive for the writing of this bill in the first place?
What
is
problem?
There a problem that you're aware of that maybe we could be helping you
May
solve?
I? That's a question.
I wanted to finish the question first.
Okay.
Legislator Rock, he can respond.
I think that the intention behind it is that until you have a registration law, you don't know who's operating and who's not in the county. You could be having, there could be dogs all over the place sold without bills of sale, without this, without that. And until you have a requirement to register, there's nothing to... There's no way to find out if there are people doing the wrong thing. Now we're finding that there are people doing the right thing because we've got folks like you coming out and making what I think were a lot of them were good changes to their suggestions to the law.
Here's a few examples, right? We're worried about these pit bull breeders selling their dogs to drug dealers to protect their drugs.
By the way, as a pit bull owner, I was particularly offended by all the references to pit bulls at the public hearings.
And so I'll tell you, a pit bull litter is between 6 and 10. You exempt 9 and below. They're going to fly under the radar anyway because you exempted them. So guess what? That doesn't fit. The people that want to have puppies because they want their children to enjoy the beautiful wonder of birth, which is not a beautiful wonder at all.
But some of it is not.
They're going to fly under the radar because they're not even going to know about this bill. The dog source breeders who are the puppy mills, They don't sell to the public. These are the puppy mills. You let them off scot-free because you give them really loose restrictions on what they can do. They don't have to know a darn thing. But then on the sellers, you say, oh, you got to have all this documentation about congenital defects and all this other stuff. Yeah, the guy that bought the dog from the puppy mill, who doesn't know a darn thing, who sold it to somebody wholesale, who's now selling it retail, they say, well, I don't know any congenital defects. No, this dog's good. Who are the people that are going to know? It's us. We're the only ones in the county are going to know because we're the only ones checking. So who's the only one penalized? The guy's doing the right thing.
That's right.
Well, I will tell you.
The only one being penalized is the guys that are trying, spending more money than we're making to make a dog.
Well, I will tell you, I have gotten more feedback from folks like you guys, the sellers, good people in the community, very, very concerned about this law, and I'm not supporting it. And just, I'd just like to say, Legislator Ronk, I mean, I appreciate, you know, you bring a lot of good laws forward and resolutions, but in this case, I know the executive's office promoted this law.
They did.
Got three legislators.
Well, two, and then Ken signed on afterwards.
My suggestion is, in the future, what we should do is say, great, let's now go out to reach out to the stakeholders in the community to sit down and make this law better.
Well, that's
because, you know what? Honestly, I've read the law. The original law is extremely poorly written, not well thought out.
I don't agree with that.
Well, you know what? There's going to be a lot of changes to it. So
that doesn't mean something's poorly written.
No, because that's a very
specific criticism.
I have the floor.
Yeah, continue.
There's going to be a lot of changes to it, and there's going to be. I've spoken to quite a few legislators in the last week, at least four that are not supporting the law right now because they've been beaten up with phone calls from people making legitimate, good concerns whose business and profession and ability to help make a really good law was ignored. And not given the opportunity to make a law really good. And I'm not saying you, but some people, because of political reasons, to get it out there and say, we're protecting pets. And you know what? It's a great example of just not going through a committee process to let's have the public input and rush a law in. And now look what's happening. It's getting delayed. It's getting sent back. It's losing support among legislators. And people that are doing the right thing are going to be hurt, which is not our job as legislators. So I'm going to, you've already spoken, I'm going to have Legislator Green, Legislator Donaldson, and no, because they haven't spoken yet, and that's how I would do it. And then I'll let you speak, Legislator.
Come on.
Sit down.
No.
I want you to listen to these guys.
No, because you don't get to sit there and attack and say that it's poorly written and poorly drafted and all that horse shit, and then get to, and then say, oh no, you can't respond to that.
The rules of the legislature are you can't speak twice until everybody
has
spoken once.
That's not true.
You've spoken on the subject, Legislator Green and Donaldson.
Show me where it says that in the rules.
Well, you know what it is. He has the right to his opinion, and let him make his opinion. I mean, you know,
I've gotten a lot of phone calls and emails on this.
Because you don't like it, you don't have to, you know, get all up.
He's allowed to have an opinion. He's not allowed to.
I'm going to take control of the meeting. Legislator Green has the floor.
I just want to second the motion that I thought I heard Legislator Ronk say, and that is to refer it back to law enforcement.
No, why don't we just light it on fire? I mean, at this point.
Well, I second that.
Okay, I got to second.
For the purposes of discussion.
Legislator Donaldson, then we'll come back.
Now, you have to
forget
let him have his opinion. You'll be able to speak again, but you're butting in when he's speaking. So, I mean, not that I agree with what he's saying all the time, but, you know, you're also butting in when he's speaking.
Oh, I'm sure you never do that, Dave.
Believe me, I know I do that. I'm not saying I didn't know. But I'm just calling you to let you know you're doing it. And, you know, my concern, of course, you know, as some people have said, this is a feel-good law, I guess. But if you're going to put a feel-good law in, it's got to be something that's good. That's not only feel-good, but that's effective. And this doesn't seem to be there. It doesn't seem to reach that criteria. And, in other words, I wouldn't have known unless they came in. I'm thinking, oh, this is a, you know, great thing. You know, I wouldn't have known. I don't have anything to do with breeding dogs. Nor do I want to. I'll be honest with you.
Just sell less than nine, and you'll be all right.
But the point is, it's like, you know, prime example is a less than nine, and that means like she's not allowed to do even one litter a year. That's not right, because you did a all catch all. You know, everything meets one criteria. You can't do that. either that or maybe up the number or something. But there's that aspect. There's the aspect that he's talking about, some of these ridiculous little formulas. I mean, why do we have them in there? So, I mean, now, will I say it's poorly written? No, I don't think it's really poorly written. I just think it was not researched well enough. I think the problem was they didn't bring in people like them for the very get, the responsible breeders that could say, hey, look, we have a problem with this. Let's try to work through this. And they come here because they want to work through it. They agree that there needs to be something to protect, you know, from these puppy mills. But they don't want to be turned around having to jump through all kinds of hoops that are unnecessary, but other people don't. And then here, and so my take on it, this needs a lot of work. And it's you know, and I support the concept of it, as do they. Yes. But I believe that it needs to be done in a way that's responsible. And I think sometimes we do things, and that's the whole point. You learn by, you know, when you start talking about it, no different than the law we talked about before with public finance. There's certain things that we need to fix a little bit in there. I mean, the original one was much different than what it is today.
Listen, thank you. I will tell you...
Excuse me, don't I get to beat up on Mr. Ronk?
I already acknowledged.
That's right. True. He hasn't jumped right. up and
Let's
down.
Let's just say to Roberts.
Go nuts.
I didn't jump up on
If you're going to let me beat up on Kenny for a second... Ken, you know how I felt about this law to begin with.
I know we're gonna. If I may quote you for just one moment for the rest of the committee, we're gonna need to put a whole new floor in the county building for all the bureaucracy I'm passing.
That's right. I'm not gonna mention the False Alarm Reduction Act, but
that's the public hearing tomorrow.
I'll be here for that. But anyway, I'm not gonna criticize you for not doing your research. I believe you have. It's, you know, probably. As written as good as any law that's unnecessary I've ever seen.
But I like that.
I like that too. That's pretty good.
I tell you, we don't need any more regulations in the county. Especially, the county should not be in regulating pets. You guys know what you're doing, you know. And after hearing you guys speak and your knowledge of what you have to do, I don't think we should send it back to law enforcement. I think we should just kill it, let it die right now, and then, you know, adios to this law and enough, and let's move on.
I'm all right with that.
No, really? May I speak now?
Sure.
Now that
let's
everyone's gotten a chance?
Absolutely.
Unless Fawn, you haven't...
you just want to beat on him?
No, they've been awesome. I actually, you know, I really appreciate your comments and the things that you've brought to the table. I don't always agree with all of them. And again, one of the things that Legislator Archer and I met with B's staff and Cappy and Erica, and we discussed things. And the biggest complaint that Lynn and I brought to the table was the lack of a representative of the greater breeding community in Ulster County present in the drafting of the law. However, I think that this has been an amazing exercise in what a public hearing is designed to be. It's for the public to come and give testimony about a law that's being proposed. I don't think that a public hearing is normally for the folks who here who aren't normally with us, a public hearing, the county spends $300 to advertise something that nobody gives a shit about in the weekly papers, so we can gavel in and gavel out, and that's the public hearing, and we have six of them a night, as I think you may have experienced some of the gavel in, gavel out public hearings that night. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a negative thing to be able to craft laws and make changes when you get public comments. And I think that they've made some good changes. But again, and due respect to the four people who are sitting over there, but that's one side of the issue. And we've listened to many other sides of the issue as well. We've listened to veterinarians. We've listened to animal rights activists. We've listened to animal rights groups.
Can you get minutes to those meetings when you've spoken to them? Because I'd love to see...
I've spoken to them myself.
I'd love to hear what they'd say. They've said.
We had some folks come to the public hearing. I mean, you know, and we have had positive comments as well.
I don't think I heard anybody support the law in the public hearing.
No? Maybe
not
I'm
many,
mistaken.
Not many.
No, there was a lot of people who supported. They talked about puppy mills. I don't think the average person did.
Some of the people that supported
really
didn't read the law.
Didn't read and didn't
They had no idea. Because what they were saying was excluded from the law.
Well, I spoke to her afterwards because I felt like a lot. She got up and she said, well, this wouldn't impact responsible breeders. And it certainly would impact me. And she said, oh, I didn't read that law. I came for the abuse law, but I just said,
right.
Which I think a lot of people did, because the abuse law, people, you know, you feel bad. And it's wonderful to want to do something. I appreciate that you're so passionate about it and you want to do something, but this law is just such overreach and, you know, it's a
law. And I don't necessarily agree with you on that, but I understand. I respect the fact that you've come out and talked about it, and I respect your point of view on it.
If you would like to pass a law, I believe there are times when there are problems, they need to be addressed. And I think in partnership, I think we could make a law that recognizes the other side of the problem and recognizes this side of the problem. There is a middle ground here. I said a month ago, I don't think the middle ground is hard to find, and I really think if you want a law, you can have a law. I just don't think this is it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And the reason for the committee process is to make laws that are good laws before we adopt them. Now, again, we're not adopting this tonight. We're sending it back to the Law Enforcement Committee to make what I think is a good law better. And some more of the concerns of the breeding community will be taken into account. We've taken quite a few of them, and we spent, you know, again with the attorneys that sponsors myself and Lynn Archer spent, I want to say, 2 hours. Just on after the public hearing, taking the concerns that were raised and everything that was given to us in writing, we took into account. I spoke to the veterinarian that handles my dog. Lynn spoke to her vet, who is also a breeder.
Council spoke to various different entities and agencies and got information that they discussed.
Again, that's where the offense comes in for me, is to behave as if nobody's talked to anybody, because there are people that disagree with it. I think if you find any law that we've ever passed, there's somebody who disagrees with it, some way, shape, or form.
But let's say Donson, and I'm going to speak.
Again, where you said it yourself that you didn't go to the breeders to bring them in. You and
the county executive's animal action network, or whatever he created. What was it? The
whatever it is.
You know what I'm talking about,
Pete. But the point is,
there wasn't a breeder on it,
so there was no stakeholder.
You said you felt that that was wrong.
I did.
So why would you still bring the law here?
Therefore, then the resolution has a problem.
We found out at the public hearing that no breeders were consulted about it. That's, again...
Can I make a suggestion?
Well, I know when I put my name on a law, I would want to make sure that that happens, I guess.
Can I make a suggestion? Can we take no action, and then maybe we'll form a let's form a subcommittee of stakeholders and come up with the responsible law that addresses the issue.
If you want to serve on the Law Enforcement Committee, you can do that, but that's not what this committee is for.
Legislator Ronk, I appreciate that, but I honestly think there's enough of a concern about the law as currently written, and legitimate concern.
It'll come back to us before it goes to the floor.
Yeah, but why don't we just take everybody's concerns into it?
Well, he's going to do that.
Yeah, but then if we make changes, it's got to go back to the Law Enforcement Committee.
No, then what happens is, if we don't like it the next time, it goes back again.
The Laws and Rules Committee is
empowered by our rules of order to make legal changes to local laws, unless it's a local law like the campaign finance reform that originates here in the Law Enforcement Committee. The Laws and Rules Committee. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, for substantive policy-based changes, it's supposed to go back to the Committee of Original Jurisdiction.
But why don't we get a good one? Why don't we get a good law to go back there? Let's create a subcommittee and get a good law to go back there.
Why don't we have a joint meeting with law enforcement,
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
I don't think we can come up with a good law that's going to create more
For the love of God. There's a motion on the floor.
I'm just putting my opinion in on that motion.
All right, well, I will support sending it back to the committee. Let the committee take a look at it. If they come back, if I'm not satisfied with it.
I'm not even going to put it on the agenda next time. If the stakeholders have not sat down and had an opportunity to have real input, and actually, I'll find out when the law enforcement committee is, but I think this should not
First
be...
First Monday.
But this shouldn't be done in a two-hour meeting. It should be done at a round table. Let's come in one night with six or seven of us, 10 of us.
Have a special meeting.
I'm not saying, I don't even know if it needs to... Well, how about a workshop? Workshop, which is not a meeting.
Law enforcement committee to do that.
But they're not going to have a workshop. They're not going to have a workshop.
Why don't we have a joint committee meeting?
A workshop. How about a joint workshop?
A joint committee workshop, we'll call it. If you want to call it a workshop, I'm fine.
Do something like that, like a workshop, because you know what? Maybe it'll pass as written.
If we're going to do that, though, we should invite the other side of the table of the issue as well.
Let's invite them in there. I don't have a problem with that. Because I do think everybody shouldn't be invited.
Me too.
I wouldn't. Well,
I've been very clear about that tonight.
Let me just say, I don't see that there's one side and another. Right. We all want the same thing.
Right.
We all want to protect dogs.
There are two different. But we can at least agree that there's two different schools of thought on some of these things.
But can I just say one thing?
Since they're two different organizations that come up with two separate sets of
different realities that people we perceive things from our direction, which is not the same thing as other people. And I'll say an enforcement.
That's
community.
Right.
They see things different.
That's right. And
that's not our world.
What about the veterinary
community? That's why we need to.
And they shouldn't be involved.
At the table we don't understand their world.
I have the floor now. One of the realities that the breeders of purebred dogs are facing right now is the veterinarians who are coming out of schools and the people who are running the shelters and humane societies have an agenda, and that is spay-neuter everything and adopt, don't buy.
Right.
That is the reality that we live in. We are the caretakers of our breed.
She's right.
That we have just dedicated the last 35 years of our lives to be making the very best dogs that we can possibly have. And we are not the only ones that want a purebred dog. I would never, no offense to you, but I would never buy a shelter, adopt a shelter dog. I want what I want. I want what I have. I want it because I know its temperament and its size and its personality, and that's what I want in my life. And if you want to adopt a dog from a shelter, that's great. But it's just a very rigid line. We are willing to help with rescue and help promote people adopting dogs, and yet they don't go the other way.
Well,
all breeders, I'm still talking, all breeders are bad, and, well, come on, you were doing the same thing. All breeders are bad, and we're even getting this from veterinarians now. I have an 8-week-old puppy that I take in for shots, and they want to know when I am getting him neutered. So this is the reality that we're living in. We're all in dread fear of seeing hundreds of beautiful breeds of dogs disappear because everybody now is pushing to the politically correct thing to do is adopt from a shelter, not buy from a breed. And we are afraid if we sit down with a table, exactly what happened at that public hearing is what's going to happen around that table. A bunch of passionate people who only see one side of the thing and we'll just be beat into submission again like we were at that public hearing. I was so terrified. There were like six of us sitting in that room, and if you read the minutes, no comment. We gave up the floor because, honestly, we were terrified to stand up and speak after we were subjected to that public hearing that night. I don't know how he was.
And I tell you, I'm concerned that the organization that may be charged with enforcing this actually helped write the law, which to me just boggles my mind.
Yes.
That's like when we built the jail, a company gave an inmate projection. They said there's going to be 400 inmates. We said, oh, we need a new jail. Will you build us a jail? Well, 5 years later, there were only 200 inmates in the jail, but they got the money because of their projection. So now you've got an organization that wants to enforce the law, and they're writing the law. It makes no sense, Legislator Ronk.
Well,
Should we then not consult with the sheriff when we're passing laws that the sheriff's going to enforce?
That is a ridiculous comment.
I have no problem consulting, but writing the law is a lot different.
Lawyers wrote the law. They didn't write the law.
They wrote it with their...
They consulted on it, yeah, like you're saying. You got a problem with consulting.
Based on who was here for the public hearing, I feel they had a much larger role in the law being written. First of all,
that's a lot of conjecture that doesn't belong in a committee meeting.
I think these folks brought it up at the beginning. What's the problem? There's no dog breeding problems that dealt by me. I mean, what is the problem with dog breeding and puppy mills? I mean, what is the purpose of this law? Because it clearly isn't going to get rid of people raising 6 or 7 or 8 dogs.
If you can see into the future, then God bless you.
But what's the purpose? Can we?
Nobody's answered that yet.
Can we?
It's election time, and Mike wants.
If we can send this to, if we can send it back.
If that was the point, then we wouldn't bother sending it back to make it better. We would just push it through.
But usually, do you have
defeat it? Petition discharge passed.
Usually, when you have a local law, you have a problem. I don't. Nobody's identified what the problem is.
Period. I don't see how they could improve it.
You know, nobody's identified why we need this law.
All right. Well, I make it. There was a motion on there to send it back to committee, and a motion was seconded. Can we have
Mrs. Fairweather speaking? I'm going to let Mrs. Fairweather speak.
I just wanted to say that I hate to tell you places, but my son used to live with a woman who worked for PETA. And I will tell you that there are organizations that their goal is to get rid of purebred breeders. I mean, I know that. I told them, don't mention my name to anyone. I'm very happy to say that.
Clearly, PETA didn't consult them a lot.
No, I'm not. They didn't.
HSUS is their close cousin.
But it's a point. The point they're trying to make is it's people trying to get rid of them.
$160 million to help care for dogs. And the other $157 million goes to lawyers and lobbyists and, quote, education. So it's $157 million against whatever we've got in our pockets. And I'm going to fight with whatever I've got in my pocket. It's not a good law.
Okay. We've got a motion and
that's
a second.
Fine.
All in favor of referring it back to
aye.
Laws and rules?
Law enforcement.
Aye.
Law enforcement. All opposed? It carried 3-2. So it's going to go back to committee.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Since you came out tonight, if the law enforcement committee, judging from what you just said, I'm skeptical that you would approve even a modified bill. Let me finish. If the law enforcement committee hears your concerns and finds a way to incorporate them, and create a consensus bill, will you support legislation at all?
Yes. Yeah. I already wrote. We took the original bill, modified it, section by section, page by page, not saying this is right.
Yeah.
It was an idea.
Okay.
Have a copy of that?
We do.
The idea, I can tell you right now, it's not right. But there is a way to make a good law here. There is. And I can't say that there are no problems in the world. There are. It happens, and those people need to be dealt with. And so I don't object to a law. I just want a good one.
This is the last thing I say tonight, and anybody else can jump up and down on me afterwards if you want to. But you can't make laws that only apply to certain people. It is impossible to make a law that only applies to the people who are doing the wrong thing. But the people who are doing the right thing are often not punished by laws against doing the wrong thing. Now, sometimes it makes things a little bit more cumbersome for some people, but you don't not make a law because it makes something more cumbersome from one person if it's going to stop an illegal activity. Gun control laws are made because people do bad things with guns. And they usually affect people who are law-abiding, proper gun owners more than the people who are going to do the wrong thing with the gun. But you don't not regulate
firearms because it's going to make people who use them in the right way have more trouble.
Okay, but Legislator Ronk, with this law, nobody has said who we are targeting, you know, why we're having a law, what's the problem, but clearly there's people that have under eight dogs or less who are probably doing it wrong, most likely doing it wrong. They skate in this law. This law doesn't affect them. So if we're going to do... I'm sorry. Did I say something wrong?
No, I was just going to say there's a law in New York State already that exists that covers this if you sell more than 25 dogs a year.
And the legislature recently passed a bill to allow localities to regulate things of this nature because the state doesn't have the resources to regulate them on their own, okay. Which is the reason we could do this in the first place.
Okay, but why are people that breed six, seven, eight dogs exempt from this law, but somebody that does 9 or 10 are in it? And then
because if you didn't exempt people with less than 8 dogs, you'd have 45 people sitting behind here saying that they don't agree with the law.
So it's not about making sure
the
dogs are safe.
Because if
you believe dogs are safe, you believe all dogs are safe.
We just vote to send it back to the committee.
We did, but we're going to
fight about it. Then it's not about being safe with dogs, because if somebody had less than 8 dogs, then those dogs don't have to be safe.
We've got another resolution. We've already beaten that dead horse to death, brought them back up with him again.
Hopefully I won't be here again when we talk about it next time.
Okay, late resolution approving the memorandum of agreement by and between the County of Ulster, the Ulster County Sheriff, and the Ulster County Sheriff's Deputies PDA. Memorandum of agreement by and between the county.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second.
Kevin got it.
Any discussion?
I'm sorry, that was...
Again,
you moved it and he seconded?
I would just like to say I wish we had more time. It got approved a week ago. We got an email 3 or 4 days ago. But it doesn't look like there's really many changes, right?
No, and it's...
The health insurance that somebody's killed it a lot.
You're waiting for the union to come forward.
Bea, I have a question. I don't know if you're able to answer individual questions, but I know that if not, you'll get back to me. I had understood that the sheriff had been trying to get drug testing provision in the contract, or he was interested in getting a drug testing program in the contract with the PBA. Do you know if that was negotiated here or not?
I don't know, but there is...
Yeah, there's something in that.
There's already a drug testing provision...
For new hires, correct?
Anybody.
Oh, okay. It's
reasonable suspicion. The sheriff has the authority to have someone...
Right, but he's got to have reasonable suspicion. Yeah. I think he was looking for something random.
Well...
I could be wrong.
I think it was an issue of whether or not it was in the agreement or whether or not it was an addendum to the agreement.
Okay.
Then there always was an addendum to the agreement.
Okay.
Okay.
It's just as
binding as if it was in the agreement.
Okay.
Right?
I was impressed that you know the deputies had agreed to this because they had been in binding arbitration for many years and we were many years behind. Thank you. Right at the back. random drug and alcohol testing per the sheriff's current policy. So
that doesn't say much, though.
I don't know what the current policy is.
Yeah, we don't know what the current policy is.
Well, he's got books of his current policy, depending on what the issue is. So we know that because we're the ones that have to discipline when there's a...
Article 78.
Section 78.
Yeah, Section 78.
In 575, under civil service law. So he's got a very thorough book of his procedures for anything under the sun, okay?
So, I just getting back to it, I was impressed that we were able to... I think this is a good deal for the county. And we're finally not under the thumb of the arbitrator, who I think would probably award more than this.
Did we vote on this?
Maybe
really?
Not.
Did we all vote?
Maybe not.
That's what we're talking now.
Did we all vote?
Shh, that's what we're talking.
Oh, let's take a vote?
No, Legislator Ronk was speaking.
It's okay. I've spoken enough tonight.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
None. Make a motion to adjourn.
Well, no. Any new business?
No.
Any old business?
No.
I make a motion to bring back up the dog.
Hold on. Wait. Hold on. All right. Go nuts.
All right. All in favor of adjourning. Thank you, B.
Aye.
Opposed? So, carried.
Was that actually a second?
Meeting's adjourned at 8:25. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We'll keep...